Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. Good morning, Beth Ann.
Good morning, Chris.
What's this about our having a right to a clean environment?
Well, around the world, there are a number of countries which believe that. And this morning, we're going to talk with someone from one of them. Earlier this year, global states at the UN Human Rights Council affirmed their obligations under human rights law to provide a safe, clean, healthy, and sustainable environment. 95 constitutions around the world have that spelled out. The U.S. isn't one of them, neither is Canada. But the Constitution of the Philippines does guarantee the right to a healthy environment and a legal remedy if that right is trampled. Dr. Romeo Quijano is visiting Hawaii this week to make that point, and he joins us now. Good morning. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. Thank you for having me here.
This is all rather recent in the Constitution of the Philippines, dating from the latter 80s. It was in the Constitution, but not necessarily codified in law, which is where all of this began to come out in the early part of this century.
Yes, it's the post-dictatorship constitution that we had in 1987 that enshrined in our constitution, specifically under Article 2, Section 16, that says that the people have the right to a balanced and a healthful ecology.
But there was no law that said how that was going to happen.
Yeah, usually constitutional provisions would need a so-called enabling law, so that people will have a remedy just in case these rights are violated. And so this was realized later by even our Supreme Court at the time. And so, but only recently that it was clearly spelled out through what they called new rules and procedures for environmental cases, which came out only 2010. And it was mainly through the initiative of our former Chief Justice Puno, as a result also of the campaigns of civil society groups. And the year before that, there was a seminar on environmental justice. And so finally, the Supreme Court issued these rules and procedure. And in that rules and procedure, it was spelled out that the people have, if they feel that the right to a healthy environment is violated, then they can petition the court, the higher court, the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, because the provision also says that the potential damage has to be in at least two provinces and at least two cities. If it happens only in one city, then you're not qualified to file for that kind of petition. We call it writ of kalikasan. Literally, it means writ of nature. And together with other relief with it, like, for example, immediately the court can issue, if they think your petition is valid, that they can issue what we call a temporary environmental protection order, which immediately stops the activity temporarily while the merits are being discussed.
Which is kind of what's happening right now with one particular case surrounding GMO eggplant.
Well, actually, that phase, the temporary thing, is already finished because there was already a cease and desist order regarding the issue. But now it's in the Supreme Court again because the other party, mainly the big companies and the government agencies who gave the permission for the big companies to grow GE eggplant, they have filed a motion for reconsideration at the Supreme Court, and we're waiting for the final decision. Once the Supreme Court decides that their motion for reconsideration has no merit, then we can say conclusively we have won, and they can no longer plant genetically modified eggplant. So that's a landmark victory for our case, I think, because now the court recognized the juridical personality of the petitioners, that they have the right to file this kind of case under the rules, the new rules of procedure, and that the court decided to issue the writ of kalikasan based on the precautionary principle, which says that when an activity has the potential to have serious and irreversible damage, then action should be taken to prevent or not allow that not to happen.
Right, and the precautionary principle seems to be far more accepted and active around the world, certainly, than it is in the United States.
Yes, but I understand that in several instruments, actually, it can be interpreted that there's already a precautionary principle enshrined in certain kinds of law in the U.S. For example, in the Great Lakes region, the precautionary principle is also spelled out in protecting the Great Lakes. So there are legal provisions, I think, that
but
have been
but
used.
But not that are necessarily nationally codified in the way
yes.
they are in your country.
Yes, yes, because it's not in your constitution, and there's no specific law actually spelling that out. In our case, it was clearly spelled out by our own Supreme Court.
Well, sometimes, you know, timing has a lot to do with it, too. I mean, a constitution that was developed post-1987 looks a lot different, perhaps, than one that was done in the
Yeah, because the earlier constitution was actually a colonial constitution. That was 1935 constitution. So it's, but again, the reality is that despite the progressive provisions, the implementation of the constitutional provisions is another thing. That's why sometimes we need clear spelling out by the Supreme Court.
You're here in Hawaii, you've been talking, and you will be talking again this evening. What's the lesson you think for Hawaii?
Well, I think the basic right to health is also there, which is part and parcel of the right to a healthy environment. You cannot talk about the right to health, which is already enshrined in the basic human rights and also in most constitutions. Even if there's no clear spelling out of the right to healthy environment, you cannot enjoy your right to health if you don't have a healthy environment, because you cannot separate your health from the health of the environment. So this is some kind of a derivative right for those who don't have it enshrined in the Constitution. So I think it still can be argued, and based also on customary law, that's quite clear. And I think there is also recognition of customary law in several countries, even if it's not spelled out clearly in the provisions of the Constitution. So there are other kinds of laws that you can use. For example, there's also international treaty on the rights of the child, rights of women. So you can use a lot of international instruments arguing your case that your right to health should be protected.
But that usually isn't as strong as
yes.
something that is codified
yes,
within a country or within a state.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's why it needs a lot of activism from the people's side.
Which kind of brings us back to the point about why you are here and talking to a lot of people during your trip. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you also for the opportunity.
Dr. Romeo Quijano is a medical doctor and professor of pharmacology and toxicology at the University of the Philippines, Manila. He's also president of the Pesticide Action Network Philippines. And he's in Honolulu this week. Tonight he'll be featured in a talk story in Honolulu. Details are on our Facebook page, Hawaii Conversation. You're listening to The Conversation on statewide, member-supported HPR2. It's now 8:14. Later in the show, MidPAC students pay a visit to one of the homes of theater. But first, here's your quiz.
Unihua, ulehua, unihau, ukaua, uahu, umulokai, ulanai, umau, ukahulabe, uhawaii.